Hello and welcome to Radio Prague. My name is Ian Willoughby. We start the program with the news. The ruling Social Democratic Party is preparing for an important conference this weekend, with the party's future policy direction up for debate. Chairman Stanislav Gross and Finance Minister Bohuslav Sobotka are reportedly in favour of a more centrist approach. Meanwhile, Labour Minister Zdeněk Škromák is calling on the Social Democrats to stick to their traditional socialist principles. Mr. Škromák is also standing against Mr. Gross in a leadership contest, but is not expected to defeat the Prime Minister. The Social Democrats lost European Parliament, Senate and regional elections last year and currently have around 14% voter support. A special lower house commission says the Czech Republic made several mistakes, which led to the country having to pay out 10 billion crowns, or over $400 million, in an arbitration case. The Czech state was fined after being found guilty of not protecting the investment of a US company in TV Nova. Commission head Stanislav Křeček said it would be up to the state prosecutor to decide whether any charges were filed in connection with the costly mistakes. Former Czech President Václav Havel has sharply criticized the European Union for deciding to no longer invite Cuban dissidents to receptions at EU states' embassies in Havana. The EU has reportedly adopted this position so as to facilitate increased dialogue with the Cuban authorities. However, in an article in France's Le Figaro newspaper, Mr. Havel described the EU's stance as diplomatic apartheid. The Union could not have found a better way of tarnishing the ideals of freedom and respect for human rights. Vodičkova Street in the centre of Prague has been closed after the pavement collapsed on Thursday while repair work was underway. Two workers fell into the hole, with one of them sustaining serious injuries to his spine. Officials say the street is likely to be closed to traffic for at least 2 weeks. Several Czech MPs are calling for an end to the anonymity enjoyed by people who use pay-as-you-go mobile telephones with prepaid cards. They say such anonymity makes it harder for the police to monitor criminals, the Daily Mladá Fronta DNS reported on Friday. However, around three-quarters of the Czech Republic's mobile phones use unregistered prepaid cards, and some mobile operators say they do not believe politicians would take the radical step of banning them. And that's all the news we have time for today.
Thanks for tuning in to Radio Prague. Coming up next, our weekly magazine, Inside Central Europe. Don't forget that on some of our times and frequencies over the weekend, you can also hear our traditional Saturday programs. For details of precise times and frequencies, please send for a brochure at Radio Prague, English section, 12099 Prague 2, Czech Republic.
Hello and welcome to Inside Central Europe with stories from Poland, Hungary, Slovakia, Slovenia and the Czech Republic. I'm Kerry Skyring and this week a solemn ceremony at Auschwitz marks the 60th anniversary of the liberation of the Nazi death camp. We'll hear from a Jewish survivor and we'll hear how the Roma of Central Europe were targeted for extinction in the Holocaust. Also this week, the debate on gay marriage in Slovakia. These stories and more in this Insight Central Europe, but first here's Dita Asiedu with the news.
Thank you, Kerry. Holocaust survivors and political leaders from Central Europe were among thousands of people from around the world who attended ceremonies in the Polish town of Oświęcim on Thursday. They were marking the 60th anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz death camp, where up to 1.5 million people were murdered. There were further ceremonies throughout the region to remember Jewish and Romani victims of the Holocaust. The head of Slovakia's Jewish communities, Josef Weiss, has expressed anger at an attempt by the government to abolish the crime of denying the Holocaust. The government says that the law passed in 2001 is at odds with the right to free speech, but Mr. Weiss said that society needed to defend itself against demonstrations of extremism. Some 136,000 Slovak Jews died during the war, and only 3,000 returned from the death camps. The Austrian diplomat and coordinator of the Stability Pact for Southeastern Europe, Edvard Buzek, has said that there must be a breakthrough this year in defining the future status of Kosovo. Speaking in the Slovenian capital, Ljubljana, Mr. Buzek said that full independence was not an option. He said one possibility would be for Kosovo to have half-independent status under the monitoring of the European Union. The Czech finance minister, Social Democrat Bohuslav Sobotka, has issued a more optimistic forecast for the country's economy in 2005, predicting growth of 3.8% over earlier forecasts of 3.6%. A cut in taxes paid by lower and middle-earning groups planned by the ruling Social Democrats should drive the economy's growth, Mr. Sobotka told journalists. Slovakia does not support a possible expansion of the Visegrad group to include Slovenia and Austria. Foreign Minister Edvard Kukan said he was convinced that enlarging the group made up of Slovakia, the Czech Republic, Hungary and Poland would be a step towards its demise. He added that he believes the Visegrad group still has a role even now that its members have gained EU membership. He said it could present a joint platform in future EU financial agreements.
Thanks, Dieter. The sound of the Auschwitz train recreated at the 60th anniversary of the liberation of the death camp in southern Poland last Thursday. The train brought Jews, Roma, Sinti, homosexuals and others persecuted by the Nazis to the most infamous of the camps. Many heads of state gathered at Auschwitz for the commemoration, among them Poland's president Aleksander Kwaśniewski.
Jesteśmy w miejscu, w którym żadne słowa nie są w stanie oddać całej przerażającej prawdy.
We are now gathered in a place where no words can express the terrifying truth about the horrors committed here, but we must speak, remember and cry out that this was hell on earth. Here humiliation, fear, pain, suffering and death were every day.
Poland's president speaking at Auschwitz on Thursday. Bogdan Zarin has been covering the anniversary for Radio Polonia and filed this report.
As world leaders from over 40 countries converged at Auschwitz-Birkenau in southern Poland and echoed the universal message that the Holocaust should never happen again, Anna, a Polish Jew, relives her horrific experience at the Nazi death camp. Anna was born in the city of Lwów, then in eastern Poland, which was grabbed by Stalin at the end of World War II.
Well, the gossip of the day was, if the commandant, Mr. Hess, was in the camp, and in what humor is he? And if Mengele arrived, that was the gossip. Because if Mengele arrived, we knew that one barrack is going to be inspected and people are going to die. In Mengele used to come every week. You had to strip. He was in the middle. And we were going around him, close under right arm. Now, if he didn't like you, if he didn't like your face, or you had a pimple on your body, or you were too skinny, or you were too pale, you went left. You were useless.
Now in her late 70s, this mild-mannered, elegant mother of two was only 15 when her train finally rolled into the Nazi concentration camp. Little did she realize that she was entering the largest graveyard of European Jewry. The stench of burning flesh and the sight of bulldozers plowing thousands of charred bodies into deep pits were commonplace.
We heard and we smell the screaming and crying and shooting and then the fire from the ovens, the smoke. I do not blame Polish people for that. That was just a very, very convenient place for Hitler to build that camp. They had camps all over the place. So how could they blame Poles for Auschwitz if they died also?
Anna was enslaved for 12 months at the Nazi death camp before Soviet forces came to liberate her and her fellow captives. The Red Army liberated just 7,650 survivors at Auschwitz-Birkenau.
I was born in Lwów. I was from the east of Poland, and We had a very, very bad experience with the Russians. They came in 1939 and they stayed in 1941. And my father got 3 strokes because of them. I felt very, very disappointed. We thought the Americans will walk in or the Brits. But it was the Russians. And I said, oh no, not again. The tanks were coming and they were, the soldiers were throwing food, bread, sausages, cigarettes. And the people were hungry. They were starved and they ate that. And they got terribly sick and they died. Right after the war, they died. Because if you starve for 4 years, you just don't eat sausages and black bread. You have to be on a light diet. But with the Russians, well, everybody was sick. Then most of the people died.
So it was like an anticlimax for you.
Yes. We thought that Poland would be free, but of course, the Russians arrived and everything went back like it used to be before when they occupied Poland.
Over 1.1 million people perished at the hands of the Nazi killing machine. Historians, however, argue that the Holocaust was a tragedy against mankind in general. Before 1990, communist authorities purposely altered the truth behind the Holocaust. One communist lie was propagated for 40 years, which described Auschwitz as a place of martyrdom of Poles and other European nations as much as Jews. Their findings were based on citizenship rather than religion or ethnic background, which diluted the scale of the Jewish genocide. The number of killings was exaggerated to 4 million. Communist authorities insisted on giving the Auschwitz crime a multinational dimension. The fact that mostly Jews were killed there was hushed up. It wasn't until the early 1990s, when Poland became democratic again, that all the lies about Auschwitz disappeared from the local museum. Bogdan Żaren for Insight Central Europe.
Thanks, Bogdan. The Porajmos, literally the devouring, is the term the Roma used to describe the Nazi regime's attempt to wipe their people off the face of the earth. It's their word for the genocidal wave of terror known to most of the world as the Holocaust. An estimated 500,000 Roma were killed during the Second World War. Only 5% of the Czech-born population survived. Nearly all who lived through internment in the Czech-run labor camps near Hodonin and Leti later perished in the so-called Gypsy Family Camp at Auschwitz-Birkenau. Brian Kennedy reports.
Inmate number 1996 was among the few Roma to survive Auschwitz-Birkenau. The Nazis didn't bother to tattoo an ID number on Antonin Hlavacek's arm. Romani children, like the elderly, weren't meant to live long, so his number was written only in ink. But 60 years later, Mr. Hlavacek can no more forget the number he answered to as a boy at Auschwitz than the atrocities he witnessed.
The transports would all come in when it was dark. We weren't allowed to go outside, but heard it all. They'd pull everyone out of the train, pile up their clothes and belongings on the floor, and send most of them straight to the showers. Instead of water, it was gas that came out of the pipes. There was also a group of prisoners selected every 3 months that was given more food and made to work in what they thought was a bakery. Only months later did we realize it was a crematorium where they burned people. The toilet was just a big hole with a piece of wood over it. To get to it, we had to move aside dead bodies because they were only taken away every 3 days.
The horrors of the death camps have been exhaustively documented, but the wartime fate of the Roma, who, like Europe's Jewish population, were singled out for extinction by the Nazis along racial lines, is less widely understood. Their tremendous suffering and loss often reduced to little more than a historical footnote.
Defendant Hermann Wilhelm Göring.
No Roma were called to testify at the post-war Nuremberg trials, and no one spoke there on their behalf.
Defendant Rudolf Hess.
Artur Radwanski, a Jewish survivor who still bears his faded Auschwitz tattoo, made a point of bearing witness in recent years, traveling to Germany to explain the Holocaust to students of all ages. One horrific memory stands out in his mind above all the others. the day he watched guards bring in a group of Romani war veterans from Germany.
I witnessed the most terrible thing, something which no one else knows about in this country because no one else is alive to remember it. One day, the Auschwitz guards brought in between 400 and 600 Romanis from Germany. Many of the men were former German soldiers who had fought in Poland during the First World War. Some of them were still wearing their medals, the Knight's Cross, if you're familiar with it. They were decorated soldiers, German soldiers, and yet one night the guards came and took them to the gas chambers to be killed.
The liberation of Auschwitz, 60 years ago this Thursday, January 27th, came too late for the Roma, as it did for over a million Jews and tens of thousands of Poles, political prisoners, and gays of all nationalities. Months before the liberation, camp authorities closed the gypsy camp, gassing some 3,000 Roma in the first days of August 1944. Over 20,000 Roma had already died there from starvation and disease, or in the gas chambers.
Brian Kennedy reporting. And if you'd like to hear any of these stories again, go to our website, www.incentraleurope.com. You'll find text and audio of all these stories. Insight Central Europe is a co-production from Radio Bologna, Radio Prague, Radio Slovakia International, Radio Budapest, and Radio Slovenia International. Hungary has taken over the presidency of the International Commission for the Protection of the Danube River and will hold this through 2005. The presidency and the commission also cover another major European river, the Tiser. It's the Hungarian Minister for Environment and Water, István Orri, who will chair the commission, and he told György Jakabi about some of his plans.
The main goal is the Water Framework Directive implementation continuation. In this term, in June 2005, we will organize a multi-stakeholder forum in order to put into the pipeline of the public debate of the Water Framework Directive implementation, so-called roof report. Also very, very important for Hungary, the flood action plan implementation started in 2004 under Hungarian expertise. In December, when the 10-year anniversary of the ICPDR actually was celebrated in Vienna, the Tisza countries decided further cooperation for the sub-river basin management. This is also a very, very important target of the Hungarian presidency as well.
The new president of the International Commission for the Protection of the Danube, Hungary's István Orri. As you heard, one of the main tasks is to improve flood protection without damaging the river's natural environment. This follows the devastating floods in Central Europe in August of 2002. Philip Weller is the General Secretary of the Commission, and he told Bethany Bell about plans for flood management.
The International Commission for the Protection of the Danube River has developed what we call an action plan for sustainable flood management. It recognizes that floods are going to happen. The issue isn't to stop the floods. The issue is to stop the damage that occurs from the floods. And you do that by allowing waters to spread out over the land in the way that they naturally would, ensuring that people and buildings and things that are of economic value are not built in floodplain areas where they will be damaged or destroyed.
Traditionally, and to this day, many cities, towns are built on the river, very, very close to flooding areas. How do you stop this, and is there the political will to do this?
Well, there clearly has been a recognition in recent years that building higher and higher dikes that are going to be continually flooded or breached is not the answer anymore, and that we have to recognize that we have to live with floods. We have to learn to ensure that the waters don't move as quickly from the areas where they're falling as rains or melting snows into the rivers. And we have traditionally done that through the building of cities, the quick transport of water off the land. And we have to go back to the way that the natural systems are, in the sense of retaining the waters in the headwater areas, making sure that they don't build too quickly. Cities like Vienna or Bratislava, Budapest do need flood protection works. There's no question that flood protection works are needed, but to reduce those to the minimum in the sense of not having that as the primary strategy for protecting from floods, but to try and minimize the peaks of water that do happen.
Philip Weller, the General Secretary of the International Commission for the Protection of the Danube, he was speaking to Bethany Bell. Slovakia appears to be bucking the trend in the EU by refusing to recognise same-sex marriages conducted in other EU countries. In fact, it's taken a unilateral decision on this, even after other justice and interior ministers agreed to recognise same-sex marriages conducted in the other member states. But some Slovaks plan to defy their own government on the issue. Josef Pavlovic is a former priest in the Uniate Church. He wants to conduct same-sex marriages in Slovakia. Martina Greneva met up with him and asked him to explain why.
Chcel som to urobiť, ale skôr som sa pritom chcel oprieť o tradíciu.
My intention was to follow the ancient tradition. Until the beginning of the 17th century, the Church used to also bless marriages of people of the same sex. There are numerous records of this ritual. American professor John Boswell writes about this in his books. I wanted to wed a gay and a lesbian couple, but I wasn't successful. The couple simply broke up. It is a problem in this community to find a couple of people who are believers and would like to have their relationship blessed by the church. This minority has got used to being ignored by the church.
It is not legal in Slovakia to marry people of the same sex. If you find a couple who would like to get married, what would happen? Would it be possible for you to wed such a couple in a sacred place, in the church?
It would probably not be performed in a church, but in some garden or on a meadow or something like that. All rituals are for people. I wouldn't find it a problem not to wed those couples in a church. And I wouldn't have any problem also with permission, because I wouldn't ask for any. The permission to act like this is given to me by my conscience. The request of the couple and the ancient chants to bless ties of the same sex following a ritual found in ancient sources. The church used to bless crops, animals, and weapons. I will not ask for any permission to bless a relationship of two people in love.
Would this act be legal? Would the church recognize a marriage performed by a suspended priest?
Following Catholic doctrine, I am and forever will be a priest.
How do you see the future of registered partnerships in Slovakia? Do you think that people will accept and not fear them?
Fear or not to fear? I think that Slovaks are the same as other Europeans. Westerners are probably more flexible, but it is not ideal either. This discrimination has been formed for several centuries. It is difficult to predict what it will be like in Slovakia. I think that the young generation today sees things differently to their parents. I think Slovaks are not silly. They are quite sensible, so the future will not be catastrophic. It will take some time, but we'll get there.
Josef Pavlovic, a former priest in the Uniate Church, was speaking to Martina Greneva. More than 140 years after it was composed, Jacques Offenbach's opera Die Rhein-Nixen, or The Fairies of the Rhine, has finally been given a fully staged production. The Slovenian National Theatre Opera Company is giving 10 performances of the work in the main hall of Ljubljana's Cultural and Congress Centre. Ksenija Samadzio-Matul from Radio Slovenia International has more.
Offenbach's opera Rhein-Nixen premiered in Slovenia on the 13th of January in a historic production. The opera was unknown at that time, as the only time the opera was put on stage was in 1864 in the Imperial Opera House in Austria's Vienna. Some years ago, the German agency Landgraf was looking for a suitable opera house to stage Jacques Offenbach's opera Rhein-Nixen, and Damiana Zernik of the opera in Ljubljana told us why the Ljubljana opera was the right choice.
So the big question appeared: who will be brave enough to put it on the stage 140 years after its creation, after the very successful world opening on January, and after sold out 12 reprises, there is no doubt anymore. Artistic management, soloist, chorus, and orchestra of Slovene National Opera Ljubljana have courage, abilities, and interest to do it.
The public is impressed. The Rhein-Nixon is very much welcomed by the public and by international critics, and it is an important event of historical meaning for Slovenia.
It's difficult to be the first in staging of such opera, and it's bringing a lot of attention of international public as an opportunity for the Slovene National Theatre, Opera and Ballet Ljubljana to present itself.
The Slovene National Opera in Ljubljana is taking its role as ambassador for Slovenia very seriously and wants the public abroad to enjoy this great piece. And so the Slovene production of the Rhein-Nixon will also be performed in Winterthur in Switzerland on the 23rd and 24th of February. And in St. Pölten, the opera will be performed in April this year.
Ksenija Samardzija-Mato from Radio Slovenia International reporting. And if you'd like to hear any of these stories again or find out more about the Insight Central Europe team, check out our website. It's www.incentraleurope.com. And that's it for another Insight Central Europe. It's a co-production by Radio Polonia, Radio Budapest, Radio Slovakia International, Radio Prague and Radio Slovenia International. I'm Kerry Skyring. The producer is Dieter Asiedu. Join us and the rest of the team next week.